KALW.
Pues en cierta forma algo impotente.
She says she feels helpless, that there's nothing she can do to get rid of pesticides she thinks harmed her children.
In Monterey County, mothers who worked in farm fields during their pregnancies worry about the effect it's had on their children.
It's always very scary to be the person that stands up.
We'll hear about a lawsuit trying to help mothers who were exposed to pesticides during their pregnancy. Then we'll meet a doctor-lawyer team trying to find protections for farm workers.
I think if you were to ask many providers if they would be comfortable with their family member working well into their second or third trimester in farm work during their pregnancy, the providers would say absolutely not.
Part two in our series on pregnancy and pesticides. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This summer, farm workers in California have been battling extreme heat, wildfire smoke, and high rates of COVID-19 as they harvest and pick the food we eat every day. And there's another health concern, but it's been around for much longer, pesticide exposure. Yesterday on Cross Currents, reporter Angela Johnston took us to Salinas, where we met a young woman who's been part of a UC Berkeley study her entire life, giving blood samples, taking IQ tests, you name it. For the past 20 years, researchers have measured the effects of early pesticide exposure on hundreds of children of farm workers. The study, called the Chamacos Study, has shown links between pesticides and lasting neurodevelopmental problems like ADHD. The findings have influenced some changes, like restrictions around spraying near schools or during school hours. But even though the study's been around for two decades, there hasn't been a huge lawsuit. Why? KALW's Angela Johnston joins me now to talk about that. Hey, Angela.
Hi.
So, I mean, it seems there should be a lot of lawsuits that could get this stuff banned. Why haven't we heard of many?
Well, pesticide lawsuits are hard to win. One researcher I spoke with compared pesticides to tobacco. It took years to prove smoking causes lung cancer, and even longer to get warning labels on products. We're only at the beginning of that battle with pesticides. And another thing to think about in this tobacco industry comparison, nicotine is just one chemical, but there are thousands of pesticides out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those are chemicals we really don't have to think about here in the San Francisco Bay Area because they seem so far away from our daily lives.
Right. Although I'm sure I've eaten something in the past week that's been sprayed with one of them. But as for the lawsuits, they're also difficult to bring about because the defendants are huge companies like Bayer or Dow. We're talking about giants that make everything from artificial turf, styrofoam, aspirin, and then different pesticides. And these pesticides are cheap and effective. They'll always have a market. So the companies have a lot of money and access to very good legal teams.
Right. But wasn't there that school groundskeeper who alleged that he got cancer after spraying Roundup everywhere? Wasn't his case successful?
Yeah, he got millions. And then many other lawsuits followed. Bayer, they're the company that manufactures Roundup, has had to pay $10 billion to settle cancer suits. And now there's pressure to get the product removed from shelves at big box hardware stores. So lawyers I spoke to said the climate is shifting a little bit.
So does that mean we may begin to see more and more pesticide lawsuits?
Yes, which brings me to one that specifically has to do with pregnant farm workers. A group of law firms around the country are building a case against Dow, specifically around this pesticide, this insecticide called chlorpyrifos. It's sprayed on everything from almonds to peaches, golf courses even. So that insecticide, it's an organophosphate, which is the class of pesticides that the Chamacos study is looking at. Even small doses of it are linked to those neurodevelopmental problems in children. Mm-hmm. And so the lawsuit is against Dow AgroSciences, the manufacturer. And last year, lawyers began recruiting Monterey County farmworker women as plaintiffs to help sue the company for damages. They're alleging that exposure to chlorpyrifos caused their children's developmental delays and learning disabilities.
Okay, and you met some of these women. Tell us more.
Yeah, one of the first meetings I had was with a plaintiff, and we'll call her Clara. She didn't want to use her real name. Clara and her family live close to the fields in East Salinas, where chlorpyrifos was sprayed. She's surrounded by rows of lettuce, strawberries, and blueberries. And Clara tells me she didn't work in the fields when she was pregnant with her first child, but their house was practically next door.
Cuando tuve mi primer hijo, en este que estaba pequeño, sí vivimos cerca, estaba pegado.
She says sometimes it smelled rotten, other times it would smell like Raid, the ant killer. But mm-hmm. She says she didn't think anything of it at the time. She had the normal pregnancy symptoms, nausea, headaches, but she also said she would feel really dizzy and couldn't concentrate. When her son was a toddler, he was diagnosed with autism, and now he's 14. And then there's her youngest son. She worked in the fields until she was 3 months pregnant with him.
Digamos, preocupada, sí. Preocupada en el aspecto de que cómo van a ser cuando sean adultos.
Worried about what it's like when they get older and she's not able to take care of them as much. She says she feels helpless, that there's nothing she can do to get rid of pesticides she thinks harmed her children.
So, Angela, can lawyers prove that the reason Clara's children have developmental problems is because of the pesticide exposure?
Well, that's the difficult part with lawsuits like these. Studies like Chamaco's show links and associations between exposure and ADHD or autism. But Clara's kids could have been exposed to dozens of other toxins during their lifetime, just from being around things like household cleaners or plastic, even dust. But associations are not causations. It's one of the reasons lawsuits against pesticide manufacturers are so difficult to win.
So if they're so notoriously hard to win, what are lawyers doing differently on this one?
Well, it's really about the data and the science that's now available. I spoke with Ashley Schwartz. She's at one of the law firms working on this case. And she's from Kansas, but last year she was traveling to Salinas almost twice a month to meet with women like Clara. And she's compiling this huge database with what kinds of pesticides were sprayed when these women were working or living near the fields. California is one of the few states that has this information available publicly on such a granular level. You can search through the Department of Pesticide Regulations website down to different amounts of pesticides sprayed in different months. Here's Ashley.
You find that women who were pregnant at this time, when working in the grape fields, they're all being exposed in February. And then you see that trend of mothers who were picking grapes having kids with neurodevelopmental delays when they were in those grape fields around the same time.
And they're also using this database to rule other pesticides out to make their case more bulletproof, making sure other pesticides sprayed don't cause similar reactions.
And how are they recruiting people like Clara? I mean, it must be hard, you know, to have some lady coming from far away from another state coming and asking you to speak out against your work like that.
The law firms are working with organizations in the community to get plaintiffs, nonprofits who are advocates for farm workers, people who are trusted by the community, who speak the language and know the culture. Here's Ashley.
It's always very scary to be the person that stands up, but I have found in this case it's a bit unique because the parents are such strong advocates for their kids. They are, you know, doing everything they can to get them the help they need. And so, you know, part of what we want at the end of this is to get these kids the help they need.
So, Angela, what is the goal of this lawsuit then? Is it just to get damages awarded to these parents, or are they trying to get this pesticide banned?
Well, I think it's both. Since the lawsuit started, chlorpyrifos has had a bad year. Dow, whose agricultural division is now called Corteva, announced it would stop manufacturing the pesticide. They're the nation's largest producer. They said it was for financial reasons, not safety, but still. And other states are banning it. California banned the sale earlier this year. Hawaii was one of the first to do it. But Ashley says lawsuits like this could be more wide-reaching than even just one pesticide or one state.
And what's the status of the case right now?
Well, COVID-19 put everything on hold, of course, and delayed a lot of the progress. And courts were closed, but lawyers are now going to be entering the deposition phase, getting info from Corteva next month.
All right. Thank you, Angela.
Thanks, Sanaa.
Angela Johnston is KLW's health reporter, and thanks to Adriana Morga for translation help. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. If lawsuits like the recent ones against pesticide manufacturers are successful, they could shift the way our society uses pesticides. But until that happens, people in all stages of pregnancy are still going to work in the fields and are still going to be exposed. Many are aware of the risks, but taking months off work without pay just isn't a choice some can afford to make. But in one small public health clinic in East Salinas, a lawyer and a doctor think the solution doesn't necessarily come from winning a huge landmark case, but with disability insurance. We go back now to KALW's Angela Johnston.
I visit the bottom floor of the Alisal Health Clinic in East Salinas in February. It's busy with new parents taking their babies in for checkups or expectant mothers learning how to breastfeed. It's home to the Perinatal Services Program, where people on Medi-Cal can get prenatal or postpartum care. The small lobby is filled with posters and pamphlets in Spanish. When I visit, there's a giveaway table in the corner with children's clothes and colorful toys. And tucked in the back is something you don't normally find at clinics, a small office with an attorney.
Buenas tardes. Buenas, buenas. Me llamo Aaron. Soy un abogado de la organización Asistencia.
So every Wednesday, I come from my legal office over to this health clinic where I have 6 appointments with farm workers and families to provide free legal services to address health-harming legal needs that they might have.
Aaron Voigt works for California Rural Legal Assistance, a nonprofit legal services program. I've caught him in the middle of huge depositions. Another time, it was leading a farmworker COVID task force. Before the pandemic, you could always find him here on Wednesdays. Today, he's meeting with Sarah. That's not her real name.
9 años trabajando en la fresa. Es algo pesado y más cuando...
She's worked in the fields for 9 years and is afraid her boss will hear her talking about an accident she had in the fields.
Tuve un accidente en el trabajo, me caí. Me dijo la doctora que...
She says she was afraid she had to keep working, but she soon realized she didn't have to work. She could get on disability. She's here to talk to Aaron about another confidential legal matter, but surprises him. She's 3 months pregnant.
Y ahorita tengo 3 meses de embarazo.
Ah, okay. Está embarazada.
Sí.
Ajá, felicidades.
I'm around pregnant women or women who have recently given birth all day.
Pregnant farm workers, to be more specific. This clinic in East Salinas serves mostly farm workers and their families. And Aaron's here because back in 2017, he helped start something called a medical legal partnership at social safety net clinics in Monterey County. It's this new model of legal services that gets lawyers like him working alongside healthcare providers.
And there are about 300 or so medical legal partnerships throughout the nation. Under the belief that when doctors and lawyers work together, there's more that we can do for people living in communities of need.
Say, for example, someone comes in to see the doctor and the doctor concludes they have mold poisoning that's exacerbating their asthma. The doctor only has about 15 minutes, sometimes less, to address the problem.
Traditionally, medical providers might prescribe an inhaler or steroids, but those substandard housing conditions are driving those patients to return to the clinic time and time again because a provider has difficulty addressing the underlying root cause of that health issue in a clinical setting.
In a medical legal partnership, the doctor can refer patients to the lawyer, sort of like a prescription. Aaron says he gets to meet with these patients for an hour, which is way longer than a doctor or nurse gets. He can direct them to fair housing resources, or if it's needed, he could help them sue their landlord. And he doesn't just address housing. It's all these other social determinants of health, like education or economic stability. And with his pregnant patients, the issue is often workplace safety.
The majority of the women that we work with are farm workers, which is a line of work that's very physically demanding.
Some lettuce workers are expected to bend over to harvest a head of lettuce every 3 seconds.
For an entire day in the hot sun, talking about bending over thousands of times over the course of one single day, in heat, working in fields with uneven ground where there are high risks of injuries and falls, and being exposed to toxic chemicals that are either being used in their workplace
or drifting over from a neighboring field. But it's a risk many choose to take sometimes because they can't afford not to, especially if they're only a seasonal worker. When Aaron first arrived at the clinic, he kept hearing stories like these. One of the family doctors at the clinic, Dr. Pedro Moreno, was hearing them too.
And my heart breaks every time a pregnant mother tells me, "Doctor, will my children have autism? Will my children have learning disabilities? I know that some of my friends have had children with those problems. What can I do about it?"
He knew the risks. 2 decades ago, he helped out with the Chamaco study, a longitudinal study following farmworker children until they turned 18. They found links between early pesticide exposure and ADHD, autism, asthma, low IQs. And as the study educated more community members of the risks, pregnant patients were telling Aaron pesticides were being sprayed less than 150 yards from where they were picking and asking what their options were. Did they have to keep working? They were worried.
They're concerned because they might have already had a pregnancy where they worked into their second trimester or their third trimester, and they experienced negative health outcomes for themselves and for their pregnancy. Sadly, we have many women at the clinic who have had miscarriages that they believe are due to the workplace conditions that they were working in. We have many women that have children with developmental delays that are scientifically linked to pesticide exposure.
So the two of them teamed up to see if they could find a solution to a problem they were asked about over and over again: how to help keep these pregnant farm workers and their children healthy that didn't involve years of expensive court cases against pesticide companies. Aaron started with the state's disability insurance program. In the California employment insurance world, pregnancy is considered a disability. So workers can stay home and get a percentage of their income through disability insurance. But that doesn't usually kick in until a month or so before their due date. For farm workers, this could mean months of pesticide exposure.
Which I think if you were to ask many providers if they would be comfortable with their wife or their daughter or their family member working well into their second or third trimester in farm work during their pregnancy, the providers would say absolutely not.
The workaround? Doctors have the power to tell the Employment Development Department, or EDD, they're the state agency that provides disability insurance. They can say that someone is unable to work because of a medical condition, like, say, a fractured tailbone. But most doctors aren't trained to offer this choice to a pregnant farm worker, potentially facing an invisible harm. One time, I watched Aaron speak to a room full of nurses in the farm worker community. He asked the group when they allow their pregnant patients to go on disability, and the responses were all over the place.
Some might tell you 20 weeks, some might tell you 36 weeks, some might tell you something in between there.
So after discussions with researchers, lawyers, OBGYNs, and most importantly with women themselves who'd been denied coverage, they came to the conclusion that a doctor should be legally able to offer disability to a farm worker as early as medically advisable. That could be as soon as a pregnancy test comes back positive. And EDD agreed. It's simple. If a pregnant farm worker wants to stop working, they just need to use the disability codes that already exist. So the next step is testing it out.
Se terminó sus beneficios de disability.
Last winter, when I visit Aaron, he's helping a patient fill out a form for disability because she just had a baby. She was one of his first farm worker patients who tried to get disability very early in her pregnancy. Marisol, also not her real name, was actually denied by EDD the first time. So they're trying again to see if they can get her back pay. Despite the setback, she says it feels good knowing she's helping to work out the kinks in the system.
Pues me siento bien porque así muchas embarazadas van a poder acceder al disability muy pronto.
She says she tells other women in the field they can apply early, but they're getting conflicting information from their doctors.
Yo pienso que sí porque me ha tocado ver mujeres embarazadas.
She hears women say they're told they need to wait 5 months before they can stop working. So she tells them about what she's learned. Women in the field are educating themselves, so Aaron says the biggest challenge now is actually educating the health providers. Dr. Pedro Moreno says outside of Monterey County, he doesn't know of many physicians offering disability this early. Part of it, he says, has to do with just understanding where your patients are coming from.
And I think the main reason is because we don't work in the fields ourselves. I think if we were brave enough to just go and work in the fields for just one day, I think we will understand what those our patients have to go through.
Before the pandemic, this doctor-lawyer team toured different counties, giving presentations to providers about disability insurance alongside researchers from the Chamaco study. They've traveled to Ventura County, Santa Cruz County. I watched Aaron present in Sacramento and Santa Clara.
And after a talk like that, there's not a single provider in that room that would believe that it's medically advisable for their pregnant farm worker patients to continue working in the fields, being exposed to pesticides during pregnancy.
The pandemic has slowed these outreach efforts down for now. Farm workers are 3 times more likely to get COVID-19 than other workers in Monterey County. And now the team is spending their time leading a coalition of scientists, doctors, farmers, and farm worker advocates to address coronavirus in the community. They've pushed for PPE and testing sites, created a farm worker COVID helpline, fought for the ruling that COVID-19 care won't count against your immigration status. And Aaron is hopeful that this increased discussion about the legal healthcare rights of farm workers will continue, even after the pandemic, to help the patients that come into his office every Wednesday. In Salinas, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Angela. And that was the last story in a 3-part series on farm worker health in the Salinas Valley, looking at pregnancy and pesticides. Find out more at kalw.org and subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast to keep up with all our stories whenever and wherever you want. Today's Cross Currents team includes Annalise Finney, Andrew J.M. Garcia, Lisa Morehouse, Sonia Narang, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.